The date is May 29th, 1998, and we're watching Almost Heroes. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Leslie Edwards to my Bartholomew Hunt.
Accurate. Hello, everybody. I'm Colin Stewart.
Yes. Happy New Year. Happy 2024. Here we are with our, I guess, the best title we came up with was Wish You Were Here in the New Year. So our posthumously released movies. This week, we're looking back at May 1998 when the movies in theaters were Godzilla. More like God-awful-zilla, you know what I mean? Bullworth, Hope Floats, Deep Impact, and bonus, this one wasn't in theaters, but I love giving this a shout-out because it just makes me giggle. Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is Hoff. That's right. Yes, Michael Knight himself as Nick Fury. I love it. But, of course, our movie for today, Almost Heroes, which earned $6.1 million on a $30 million budget. Ouch.
Shocking.
That hurts.
What was going on in 1998? Were people too good for funny movies?
That's right.
Anyways, if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, like Frontier era sex dolls.
Oh, yikes. Yep, that would be spoiled.
Then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
Yeah, that's pungent. So, back in 1998, there was probably a bit of a dark cloud hanging over this movie just because of the fact that it is a posthumously released movie. That's the only thing that I could say about this is the circumstances about Chris Farley's passing may not have helped the comedy of this movie.
Yeah. I would have thought the opposite. I would have thought people would have been like, oh man, like it's like, or did he die like right around its release?
He died 5 months before it was set to release. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I would have thought people would have been like kind of like a bit more like positive about it because he was dead.
Yeah, no, this was not a Heath Ledger situation. I think it was more of this was a very sad cry for help at the end that tainted. But anyway, on that happy note, well, I've got only one tagline for you this week. I mean, I had to fill a little extra time with some banter there. Well, here we go. Almost history, almost legends, mostly ridiculous.
All right.
So one is all they need, I guess? Works for you?
I don't know. For some reason, I don't like the mostly ridiculous. I feel like I would have liked it to just be Almost Heroes at the end.
Like just blending into the title even. Yeah. Well, not much of a description. So let's go to Colin for a 60-second synopsis.
All right. In 1804, Leslie Edwards, a foppish aristocrat, has high hopes of beating the renowned Lewis and Clark to be the first to chart and make it across the United States to the Pacific Ocean. But while he has ambition and funding, he is grown up sheltered and knows little of the wilderness he seeks to cross. To aid in his journey, he hires the services of a supposedly knowledgeable wilderness man and tracker, Bartholomew Hunt, who once they get underway turns out to be less than advertised. They're aided by a crew of varied, rugged, and grizzled frontiersmen. Along the way, the group goes through various mishaps and ordeals, such as having to deal with quirky indigenous Indian tribes and vicious squirrels, a conquistador named Hidalgo, as well as running out of food and romantic snafus, as Hunt's ineptness often causes more problems than it solves. Along the way, Edwards and Hunt's shared journey helps Edward shed his aristocratic, snooty ways, and he learns camaraderie and honor, as well as a more humble view of the world he thought he understood. Hunt finds true friendship in Edwards and a sense of self-confidence he had not known before. After many hardships and setbacks, they eventually make it to the Pacific Coast just minutes before Lewis and Clark's expedition. However, once the celebration is over, they find that they do not necessarily want to go back to their old lives, and collectively decide to continue their adventure, leading Edwards and Hunt's expedition to further explore the great, uncharted worlds.
Right on. Very succinct, very, you know, just, that's the movie. I mean, it sounds like a great movie.
Oh. It is a great movie.
Yeah.
I mean, in my opinion.
Yeah, we'll talk. Yeah, so this was one that, you know, I already brought up a dark cloud, but I was not feeling that in 1998. I flocked to the theater to see this, so I was part of that $6 million that this movie made. And I saw it once when it came out on video. Like, I wasn't in love with it when it came out. And it was one of those where, back then, I kind of felt like it was too bad it was Chris Farley's last movie, because as we've documented on this show, I do love Chris Farley. And so it was just kind of one that I haven't seen since 1998. And wow. So it was interesting going back to it, and that's my history with Almost Heroes. Yeah, I love Chris Farley. That's about all I got. Now, what about you, Colin? History with Almost Heroes?
Prior to like doing this show, this was the only Chris Farley movie I had ever seen.
Oh wow! Okay.
And I don't know why I love this movie. I loved it when I was a kid. This is a true, like, I used to like this one.
Yeah.
For me, I can. It's one of those movies where I have like a vivid memory of the first time I watched it, and in my mind's eye, I can like go back and picture myself. It must have been a couple years after it came out, because I would have been in, like, I don't know, junior high. I would have been in, like, grade 9, which I think was, like, 2000-ish. Anyways, I can still picture myself, like, sitting on my couch, looking for something to watch, seeing this movie, turning it on, just, like, on a whim, and then just laughing my ass off. And, like, the eagle scene, it doesn't play as well now with my like modern sensibilities, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But I remember watching that scene for the first time and dying over and over and over again, thinking it was so funny. And yeah, I always think of that whenever I think about this movie. A few months back, maybe a year ago, actually, this movie ended up being like a $4.99 on sale purchase in the iTunes store, and I bought it immediately, and that's how I watched it.
Nice. Yeah, I was surprised that I don't own this. That blew my mind, but go figure. Well, here we go. Let's jump into Almost Heroes, directed by Christopher Guest. We saw his brother Nicholas in our last episode, Christmas Vacation. Mm-hmm. And he Margot and Todd. He was Todd. I feel like I've got a bit of a Christopher Guest thing going on. Think Princess Bride right now.
Yeah.
Right. I've got the gray streak, and
I shall be very put out.
That's right. Let's see. Produced by Denise DeNovi, who we recently mentioned in Batman Returns and Nightmare Before Christmas. She was a producer on both of those. And written by Mark Nutter, Tom Wolfe, and Boyd Hale. And so we open the movie with, you know, the compass rose right from the Page Master. That's our first image on screen of this movie. It's the library floor of the Pagemaster was my first thought. But they definitely go for like a classic Western feel. Like the fact that they've got like these musical measures that are, you know, that they change up, and it's kind of like, oh, this is the whole movie. It's like a musical, an old school Oklahoma type musical.
Yeah, you don't see like opening credits like that anymore. Whereas like I was just like, oh, like it's taken a long time till I get to the actual movie. Like this is normally reserved for the end these days. Like, you know,
yeah, that's right. Yeah. And all the epic frontier paintings and the maps and It was a fun feel to open up this movie, that's for sure. And it's one of those where I kind of forgot about that opening to it, where I'm like, oh, okay. They're going full Blazing Saddles. They're going full, you know, like, they're taking this seriously.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about our cast here, because we, like, they open up with this narration about how we have two other explorers that are going to rival Lewis and Clark and try to beat them to the West Coast. And that's when we get to meet, like, our heroes for this movie, I guess. So let's talk about this cast. I mean,
we open with, we see Hunt, Chris Farley. He's getting hanged.
Yeah, he's about to get hanged, yeah.
We got our best friend, Chandler Bong. Matthew Perry.
Mrs. Chandler Bong, please. Thank you. Yeah, this is the only one that I could find that had any alternate castings. Leslie Edwards could have been Bill Murray, Hugh Grant, or Hugh Laurie. Those were the alternate casting possibilities. Very little trivia on this movie, by the way. Not, you know, the $6 million doesn't really surprise me that there's not much to talk about with this movie, but
I would have loved to see a Hugh Grant. I think I can't even picture Hugh Grant and Chris Farley in the same room. I can't think of two more like polar opposite human beings.
Yeah. But yet you see, like, recent Hugh Grant where he seems to be having a lot more fun in his old age. And like Hugh Grant as an Oompa Loompa looks like he's going to be a fucking blast.
Yeah. Bokeem Woodbine is Jonah.
Yeah.
They have Barry Del Sherman as Sergeant. I don't even know who that is.
Yeah, I think that's the guy that's hanging Chris Farley. Like, I think this is the point where they go to the in order of appearance.
Okay. Patrick Cranshaw is Jackson. Franklin Cover is Nicholas Burr. Eugene Levy. Yeah, I think Eugene Levy is, like, the unsung hero of this movie. He's
Guy Fontenot.
Yeah. Lisa Barbuscia is Shakina. Stephen M. Porter is Higgins. David Packer. Help me out with an office joke here. I need one. Twan!
Did you get the gift I left you, Scott?
Bidwell. Hamilton Camp is Pratt. And then we have some, like, questionable, I don't know if, like...
Yeah, I have a lot of questions about that. Yes. How racist are some of these names? And I was definitely looking at some of the names on this list and wondering how many of them were Latinx people indigenous. There's a few Cruises in there.
There's some
Cruises, you know?
Some Aguilars. Yeah. I don't know about that.
Yeah. I mean, some of them are legit. I'll give it that. But yeah, there's definitely some shifting of the race boundaries going on in this movie, but not in a hurtful way. You know, not in a blackface way. Not in a, you know, like,
just in a '90s way.
Just in a very '90s way.
Kevin Dunn is Hidalgo.
Yeah, really, there's like five people in this movie that I truly recognize from anything else. I mean, it is an odd experience where it's just like, I don't know anybody.
Yeah, it was that was surprising going back. It's the type of movie where I was like, oh, where's like Rob Schneider or, you know, all that crew?
Yeah.
Like all Farley's pals, like... But then it's also kind of, maybe this was around the time where, like, they all were, like, distancing themselves from him. I don't know, but...
It might have been, yeah. Well, and I guess that is maybe part of the reason why I'm coming into this conversation with a bit of a negative tinge on my own viewing experience of this movie, is because I look at this movie and I get a little bit sad because of what I know now.
Yeah.
Right. I look at this movie and I see two lead actors that are both in the middle of drug problems And it really shows in some of the scenes, especially with Chris Farley.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a problem seeing past that.
Yeah, I think I agree. I have like a little my own twist on it where like it's kind of sad because I'm like, these two guys are so funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, I wish you could have just been happy with like how funny you were.
Yeah.
And are. And like, and
wish it had been enough. Yeah.
And wish that had just been enough is kind of where I come from more.
Yeah. 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 So we open the movie with seeing Chris Farley about to get hanged and then Matthew Perry coming to his rescue. The introduction to him is fun where he's like, we have to hurry. There's a man's life at stake. Not too fast, though.
Yeah. It is funny because Leslie Edwards, he's so Chandler in some ways that it's like, but I love Chandler.
Yeah.
But that scene specifically, I was like, oh, Matthew Perry, you have like your thing and it works for you. And I'm glad.
Yeah. Yeah. You have your lane, you know, to stay in your lane because that's where you shine. Yeah.
Yeah. But even Chris Farley, like when he gets up there and he's all like, what is he like, when I die, I hope you like bury me like face down or whatever so you can all kiss my ass or whatnot. Like,
Yeah. Well, I like the old lady though that stops him where she, you know, tells him that he can rot in hell or whatever. And he's just, Jesus, lady, take it easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he ends up rescuing him, and we get our introduced basically now to our quest for the movie and to like all our little side characters. The old man was a hoot.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I definitely like Jackson.
Jackson, yeah.
Yeah.
Is Jackson, I kept, there were a couple of guys that I couldn't, like, I know Bidwell. He's like the one that stands out to me the most because obviously he gets mauled by the bear and shot and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
But is Jackson the same as the... He's not the guy who picks up the ear and tries to talk into it.
Are those two different guys? I think he is.
Is he that guy?
Is he? Maybe he's not. You're right. Yeah.
I swear there was, like, that those might be two different characters, but they seem so similar that I couldn't remember. I kept losing track.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I'm now questioning that as well. So either way, I like both old men then, if there's two old men. If not, like just the introduction to Jackson where, you know, he goes, oh no, I'm a hard worker and everything like that. Okay, well take these to the, oh, I'm an old man. Like, yeah. I can't do that. I'll be on the ship.
That's good.
Yeah.
I love Eugene Levy in this movie. Like, I don't know why more people don't talk about this role for him because it's so unlike anything that anything I've ever else. Seen him.
Yeah, he's the tough
be
guy.
In like, and he's so funny and so just not like, you know, the American Pie dad that I feel like
kind of brought him
to prominence.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, here's a question about Fontenot. At one point, he just disappears. Now, did I miss a line? Did I look down at my notes or something during this? He just disappears with the Spanish guys. Does he say he's going to join them?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
there's a part when they're at like that bar where Hidalgo's talking to him and basically is like convincing him to leave and go with them.
I must have missed that line. Well, see, I remember him convincing or trying to convince him. I didn't know he accepted.
Yeah.
And so it's just all of a sudden we get to the point, one point where I'm like, where the hell did Fontenot go? Wait a minute. Where's Eugene Levy? Like, why is Shakina? Why is she all of a sudden Leslie's boyfriend or girlfriend?
Yeah.
Like, why are they holding hands? Where did Fontenot go?
Yeah.
So, and then he shows up with the Spaniards, and I'm like, oh, there he is.
The gauntlet.
I just don't remember.
Prepare the gauntlet.
Gauntlet. Whose idea was corn?
So good.
Yeah. I did enjoy the bit where Chris Farley is watching the page hum. Well, I had to pay for this down in New Orleans or what, Louisiana or whatever. And costumes, legitimate theater. They were dressed up like the kings and queen. Oh boy,
the king and queen of France.
Yeah. Okay, maybe there were. It was funny. Okay. I think I also found this movie just a little disjointed. It's like it came in these like little bursts of energy that, you know, but I didn't find it flowed nicely overall. No,
yeah, I agree. There's not, the problem with this movie is like there's not a lot of substance to it.
Yeah.
There's like,
and there could be.
There could be more, but it's just like they needed to like, I thought a mistake was having like introducing Hidalgo as kind of like the bad guy. Like I felt like they should have been more like head to head with Lewis and Clark. Like why didn't you make Lewis and Clark the like bad, like the actual bad guys and have them come like sabotage them or like have a back and forth between them?
Yeah.
I thought that's kind of what was missing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's kind of just this like, There's just no, I guess they're kind of like the wilderness is their enemy, I suppose, but
yeah,
it's never like a real huge threat, and it's always just played for fun gags. But I guess that's how I'd say it. It's just a lot of gags and not a lot of story for a lot of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like even the squirrel thing, as funny as it is, like it's also just so stupid.
Yeah. An animal. Yeah, I mean, and that's true. I mean, yeah, there is a certain something missing in this movie for me, and that would take it from here to up here. Like, you know, that's kind of how I feel about this movie. Like the bit where they meet the Iowa natives, like the Iowa tribe, and they party with them, and then at the end of it, he convinces Leslie that, oh yeah, no, we have to leave all this shit with them because they were going to kill you. I thought they were so nice. And he's like, I just don't want to carry that crap, right? Like, that was a very funny bit, but it was the throwaway joke at the end of this scene.
Yeah, and it never really got set up. Like, there was no, like... It kind of like
always complaining about his luggage and everything. Like it's set up that he has a lot of unnecessary luggage. It's not set up that anyone is annoyed by all his unnecessary luggage.
Yeah, kind of like the comparable, I think, is, I don't know if you've watched it, but there's this show on Max called Our Flag Means Death, where it's like a similar premise where like this guy, this like rich aristocrat, wants to become a pirate, so he like. Okay. Gets a ship and like hires this crew of like, you know, similar to this, like just like shitty pirates basically. And then he ends up running into Blackbeard and then they kind of, Blackbeard, like that's the part I'm at anyways right now, is kind of like teaching him the ways of how to be a pirate. Okay. And I feel like that's kind of what was missing with Hunt, is like, I felt like Hunt actually needed to be more competent and more like credible. You can't have both. Yeah. You can't have everybody like in their crew, everybody is just faking and pretending to know what they're doing. Like somebody needs to be the straight man in this group.
Yeah, no, and that's absolutely true. Yeah. Cuz I mean, I've seen that in movies before where, it's better when you have the bumbling idiot that is at least being led by someone competent, for mm-hmm. sure. I mean, it's good for the occasional joke like, oh, or no, sorry, I guess that was actually Eugene Levy. I was thinking the joke where it's like, oh, of all the native languages I speak, this isn't one of them.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, like, I like how he's bullshitting his way through, right? Yeah. And so, yeah, so have the one bullshit artist, but have the one guy that he may not necessarily want to be there, but whatever, he's being paid $150, so...
Yeah.
Might as well. I also like the slap fight with the Iowa tribe.
I love it. So good.
Oh, he's not right in the head.
I don't know. Everything about the indigenous people in this movie, I was kind of like,
yeah,
funny, but I just don't know if it would play well now.
Well, the old tribe, though, like the tribe of really old guys, I mean, that's funny for a different reason, because they are all amazing warriors, but you don't expect them to be, right? So, I mean, that one's making fun of old people, I think, more than anything else, right?
It's more
right?
ageist than racist.
It's more ageist than racist, yeah. Chalk sure. one up for the 90s. You sure. guys got this. And, I mean, another thing that the 90s gives us is the almost nudity in this movie. We get some yeah. side boob and some top butt, but that's about it, yeah. And some Eugene Levy top butt, too. Yeah, we get.
I was wondering if that was actually his butt, or if he got a butt double.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, in '98, was he big enough deal to get a butt double? American Pie hadn't come out.
No, yeah, I don't know.
Like, that's one of the things that is weird to think about, because everyone knows him so well for something like American Pie or for something like Schitt's Creek and these very, very distinct characters that he has on those shows, and how this is something that's completely different. But this is pre those things that mm-hmm. everyone really knows him for, and it's kind of like, this is back when he was just, you know, when he was
just an actor.
I don't know how to put it. I mean, like, it's just like, it's a year before he really broke out with, you know, his American Pie fame. Not that he wasn't already big
yeah,
enough,
imagine
right?
if this movie had been a massive hit. I wonder what that would have done to his career.
That's right. Would he have been like, I can't do Jim's dad. I mean, everyone else is asking me. Everyone wants a French character, so they've been calling me.
You look at my woman. You saw her breast. But he spits that ear out. Oh my god, that's so good.
I like the guy with the trying to talk to the ear. Can you hear me?
Can?
Oh boy, Bidwell, can you hear me? Yeah. Oh, poor Bidwell, taken by a bear, loses his ear.
I'm realizing, like, as we talk, this is one of those movies that's like, I think we can both just acknowledge, like, it's pretty stupid.
Yeah, it's really stupid.
But there's lots of funny like lines. Like,
one-liners. Yeah. They're not spread out in the right way.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, now we're gonna watch them sail down the river for a bit longer. Yeah. So they get to Snake's Bend. Snake's Bend was fun. The last settlement before uncharted territory. And so we've got so much happening there, because we get Bart or Hunt, we get him taking a bath, and we get him going to the dentist and getting a haircut. And we get all the rest of the crew going for some ladies of the evening, which
yeah, they get stuffed. I forgot about that. The dentist scene was so funny. Mm-hmm. Even those, like, I wonder what they did with those taxidermied animals with the teeth. I wonder if somebody has those, or if they're just like sitting in a storage unit somewhere.
Yeah.
I would love one
of them sitting on Christopher Guest's desk right now. Yeah.
If I was Christopher Guest, I think he should have stepped in to be Hidalgo.
He would have been a good choice, yeah. I mean, this is weird, because here's the one other interesting bit of trivia that I found when I was looking at this movie, is this is the last movie that Christopher Guest directed that has, like, a traditional narrative. After this, he went on to only do mockumentary-style movies, so, like, Waiting for Guffman and Best in Show, those kind of movies. But this is the last one that he did that's, like, kind of an actual proper scripted movie. And so it's like, well, maybe you're better at the mockumentaries. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I felt like...
Maybe it just scared him off.
Maybe it scared him off, yeah.
He should have took another swing.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know what else Christopher Guest has directed, though, outside of this and any of those like Spinal Tap type movies. But I guess when you have someone like Chris Farley, you just gotta roll with what Chris Farley does. I mean, I feel like you're just kind of holding on and hoping that the movie goes okay when you have energy like that in this movie. I mean, like him drinking, or with the drinking contest, or some of his yelly moments. I mean, he definitely gets some good traditional Chris Farley yelling happening in this movie.
I wonder if it was maybe it was like, well, you're probably onto this, like, because I feel like at this time it was like Chris Farley strikes me as like, he was like a movie, like there's probably like a Chris Farley movie a year type deal happening. Like he's somebody
he was like a movie a year, plus he would show up in a bit part in another movie.
Yeah.
Like, because this actually wasn't his last appearance in a movie, because he also had a bit part in Dirty Work, which is a Norm Macdonald movie, which came out a little bit later in the year. So technically, Dirty Work is Chris Farley's last movie, if you go chronologically.
I wonder if part of the low rating was just like that his shtick had kind of played out.
Maybe, yeah. Because like, yeah, he's been yelling since Billy Madison when he was the bus driver, right? And yeah, that's his part in Dirty Work too, is a guy that's always yelling about the Saigon whore that bit his nose off. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, wrestling an eagle is nothing compared to some of the other characters he's had.
What does he name that? When they're like at the fork in the river and he's like, oh, I'm going to name it Pittsburgh Nelly or something like that. A whore so good, you forget about the thing on her neck.
Oh, it's so stupid. Yeah. I mean, we really haven't talked that much about Edwards either. I mean, you know, he's got the whole romantic storyline for some reason, I guess. Mm-hmm. I that's the thing, is this version of Chandler Bing, it's not someone that I see scoring the lady.
No.
No.
Especially not that lady who seems uber confident.
Yeah.
Competent.
Well, and she really only gets into him when he's being a bad guy. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. When she kisses him and it's kind of like, oh, okay, well, I guess doesn't matter anymore. I guess we're doing this now. Fontenot doesn't matter. I still don't quite understand the relationship that Fontenot has. So, like, he owns her, but does he own her for romantic purposes, or does he just own her?
Well, he keeps calling her his property.
Yeah.
So I feel like he'd. I mean, yeah, you know, you kind of don't really get the sense that they're romantic, because even when they're bathing nude together, they're not, like, bathing each other.
Yeah.
That's what I would expect from a romantic relationship, I think.
You would think. Yeah, I mean, the few times that I have dared to do a shower at the same time as a partner, yes, it... I don't like doing that, because someone always ends up in a cold spot. Yeah. But, you know, when it has happened, yes, you're always soaping the other person's back. Hey, this is the first time my back has gotten a proper cleaning in a long time. But you're right. That definitely shows no romantic attachment. I'm kind of curious about that, because it seems like a setup for like one of those old classic farmer's daughter jokes, you know, with but it, I don't get, you know, I don't know, maybe he is more like a father figure, who knows. Okay,
he's his ward.
Still a mystery. Yeah. The eagle bit still made me laugh, though. Not necessarily him fighting the eagle. That's the part where it's like, okay, I like the bit where he gets down to the bottom and gets hungry, so he decides to cook the egg. Son of a! So he has to go back up for another one. And then he makes the bacon and egg. I like the layers, but the joke where it ends up she only needed the shell. I mean, that one was a well laid out joke, as ridiculous as it was to get there. It was still, I thought it was a well set up thing.
Yeah, I think there's something about the amount of times there's some sort of comedic formula at play.
Rule of three, yeah.
But even like when, you know, he keeps eating the egg because he's hungry, but then, like, he kills the pig, and then he just needs to eat the egg because he's has bacon. That was funny.
Yeah. Can't resist it.
Yeah. Edwards, this is like Matthew, but this is like season four of Friends. I don't know. Yeah. I think Matthew Perry is... Unfortunately, he's one of these people, like, I never really considered to, like, after his passing. Like, I always thought, I always loved Chandler. But, you know, I listened to his book and stuff, and then have since, like, rewatched this movie and watched some of his other stuff. And I'm like, he actually was,
whole
9 yards,
whole 10 yards.
Yeah, like, he actually was, like, a very talented actor. Like, yeah. He's very funny.
He is. Yeah, absolutely. Or was. Yes. I suppose. Unfortunately, yeah. He's not... He's the reason we're watching this movie, but not the reason for the month or how it fits into the month. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think, like, the one problem that I think we're coming up against with this movie is that it is one of the... I've heard it said before that, like, No matter how good the actors are, and I actually think like even the supporting cast in this movie, like everybody is very like even the guy who plays the like dentist, like
B&B
owner or whatever, like they're all so funny, but you can only take a D script up so many levels, like you can't make it an A, and yeah. I think the more we analyze it, that's kind of what I'm seeing. Like,
yeah,
like even the romantic arc is like, it's almost like she's just there because they're like, what are we missing in this? Oh, we need a female. We just need someone for this guy to fall in love with and blah, blah, blah. And like, but there's no reason for them to like,
no, fall none in love. Whatsoever.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, it's even things like, the egg joke, I thought, was very well set up with how she only needed the shell. But something like the Hidalgo hair joke did not land the same for me.
No, the Hidalgo joke did not. Yeah, I didn't. I was like, what?
Yeah, he's so obsessed with his hair. And then, oh, it's a wig, right? And I think it was supposed to be hilarious, but, you know, we have the sword fight where we humiliate Hidalgo. Oh, he's got a girdle and he's, you know, got a wig with terrible hair underneath. And so that's one joke that didn't land for me. And it's like, well, was that funny in 98 though? Like, can you think back to your grade 9 self? Yeah. Like the sword fight with Hidalgo, was it funny?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Like that's like I honestly couldn't even remember Hidalgo. Like I couldn't remember when I started watching this movie, like what, like I remembered like what we're talking about. I remembered like all these like little funny parts.
Yeah.
But the actual through line, the narrative story, I couldn't really place what it was.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in a way, and I mean it's not nearly as bad, but when I did year one with Aaron over the summer, I mean, year one was the same sort of thing where there were lots of bits that I laughed at, but the through line, the actual overall story was just not good. And I mean, this one, This one, it's a terrible movie. Like, but I actually audibly laughed at a few places in that movie because there are some genuinely funny bits, but the movie's a piece of shit. And this is one where it's just like there were lots of things that were very funny, but overall the movie was dull.
Yeah.
You know, there was this overall kind of, I think that's what it is the storyline is unfocused or something. There's something missing. I don't know. Yeah. But I don't know how to fix it.
Yeah.
I think you had the best suggestion of fixing it where it's like, yeah, Lewis and Clark should have been a bit more in the story instead of, oh, I found this tree with their initials carved in it. And then, you know, we see it out. And then we see them in the third act of the movie. Yeah. We pass them in our boats.
Yeah. I would have left the whole Spanish thing behind had it been more a Lewis and Clark thing. Like, cause even with Fontenot, you could have had him be like a spy. Like, you could have had him just be, like, a Lewis and Clark spy who was, like, leading them in the wrong direction or something like that. Or, like,
that's what I would have done.
Something like that, where it's, like, they're both trying to get in. It's a back-and-forth race. And then that would have been, like, your second act, like, problem of like, being detoured and now having to get back on track in time to beat them or whatever.
Oh, yeah. No, I love that movie. Yeah. I like this one. I love that movie.
Because then you could even keep the Shekina whatever love story. Like, she can still be, then all that can happen, but I just think narratively it would be better.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I also, one thing that I noticed was that there's really not very many sponsors in this movie either. Actually, there's like no sponsors except one that I kind of noticed. So I might as well go to Sponsorship Corner. Haven't had a very good streak lately. I've had a few in the last couple months where it's like, no sponsors. But always on the lookout for product placements and movies. This week, Almost Heroes is brought to you by, I'm going to say, the Hudson's Bay. Because he has a very distinct Hudson's Bay blanket. Now, I mean, it doesn't say Hudson's Bay, but as a good Canadian, I know what a Hudson's Bay blanket looks like. So, and Tavern. It's also brought to you by Tavern. Yeah. Chris Farley trying to learn to read with the A's and the B's. Enough already! Anyway. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. Sponsors. I didn't look it up,
but maybe it was in trivia. Was the bear real? I was trying hard to figure out if that was like an actual real bear, if it was someone in a suit.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. No. And no, it did not come up in the trivia. Yeah. No idea. So I imagine it could have been. Hopefully a well-trained bear.
Also love that they give bears the, like, T-Rex Jurassic. Just stay still and it can't see you.
That's right. I have an itchy nose. I don't know which is worse, the itchy nose or getting eaten by a bear. This is worse! Oh, poor Bidwell. And then, of course, we do have, you know, once they finally get to the ocean and they see that they can beat Lewis and Clark, but they're at the top of a cliff, we do get a repeat of the eagle joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also like the moment where Hunt tries to knock out Edwards. He's like, no, I will do this. No, then this is for your own good. And he punches him. How is that for my own good? It was supposed to knock you out.
Yeah.
But now I wonder, though, about the idea of they planted their flag first. So, sure, they go off north, but aren't they actually the discoverers then? Or did Lewis and Clark go, where are they going? Okay, fine. We got there first.
Knock the flag out. Yeah, I was thinking about that, too. Like, what is the historical, like... It's really more about, I think, who gets back first than who gets there first.
That's true.
Like, who reports back first?
Yeah.
Is ultimately going to be how it's determined who got there first, so...
And how do you prove in that time how you got there first? Like, do you have to take back a jar of salt water or something? Like, how do you... You can't take a picture. Can't be like, this one's for the gram. I made it to the West Coast, hashtag blessed. I mean, this is...
It's also like, I assume that when you, like, it's called charting a course for a reason. Because, like, as you go, you're like... Basically, like, you're writing a map for other people to follow. They don't, they kind of, like, Leslie was doing that at some point.
In the beginning, and he was taking samples of the foliage, and, yeah.
But once Hidalgo gets involved, I feel like they just stop doing all that stuff.
Yeah, they really do. Or at least they stop acknowledging it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the only other diary entry I think we get is when he's sick in the mountains. I think that's the last time we actually get the little diary entry gimmick going on. And then after that, I don't think we get it anymore. I can't remember for sure, but...
I wonder if there were ever plans to make a sequel to this movie where they, like, went and explored the Orient or something like that.
Yeah, tried to get across the bridge. I don't know. I was surprised, though, once we got to the credits to not see this movie dedicated to Chris Farley anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, even at the very end, because you know me, I waited till the very end of the credits. There wasn't even something at the very end where it's like, you know, for Chris or something. No. So, I don't know.
Maybe they knew it was going to be a dud and they just didn't want to. I just didn't want to sully his good name.
Yeah, well, you got photographic proof that he was in it.
Yeah, I suppose.
Well, there we go. I think that's Almost Heroes. Now, Colin, on IMDb, it scored 5.7 out of 10 and has a Metascore of none listed. Once again, I have found a movie with no Metascore listed. But I don't think that would have mattered because on Rotten Tomatoes, it's a 5% on the tomato meter. So I can't imagine the Metascore would have been good anyway. And
is that audience or critics?
No, that's critics, 5%. Audience rating of 64%.
There we go.
Come on. But Colin.
The movie of the people.
It is, yes. And those are just numbers. Like falling out of a tree when attacked by an eagle. Hit us with some reviews.
All right, an unnamed Rotten Tomatoes reviewer says 3 out of 5 stars. This movie is stupid. It doesn't even really have much of a structure. It's mostly just one dumb gag after the next. It's also lazily directed, and it didn't really seem like much care went into making it. But you know what? I laughed enough times, and I enjoyed myself throughout all 90 minutes of watching it. Maybe I'm insane, but I liked it. I think this movie is meant for people who enjoy really off-kilter, dry, oddball humor. The kind of humor that you would find in an early Adam Sandler comedy. If that sounds like it appeals to you, then by all means, give it a watch. You might also like it if you're at least a Chris Farley fan.
Yeah, I mean, it's as 90s comedy as you get. This is 90s PG-13 comedy, rather than 90s, like, you know, American Pie type comedy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This next person says, I love 5 out of 5 stars. I love, love, love this movie. I desperately hope for a nostalgic reevaluation by diehard Chris Farley fans. Listen, I watched this movie in Predator over and over and over as my favorite movies of all time. I've literally watched this movie 50 plus times. It breaks my heart that this movie gets 8%. How? This movie makes my heart happy and I will watch it until the day I die.
This and Predator.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite the... Quite the pair.
Yeah. This is a long one. This Rotten Tomatoes super reviewer gives it 2.5 out of 5 stars and says, "This is one of those low-key comedies that you saw on the top shelf at your local video shop purely by accident when you went in for something else. Something good. You noticed it and it intrigued you because you'd never heard of the film. You took it down and looked at the back of the VHS box to see more. Chris Farley and Chandler from Friends? Could be good fun. In brief, this film is fun, but very, very, very lowbrow and only works purely because of Farley's great screen presence. When I say fun, I mean it's good for the odd chuckle or visual moment, but overall it's complete and utter trash. Dare I say fun trash. I can't deny I liked Farley and his wild, over-the-top, insane physical comedy. Childish, yes, but also amusing. All of this was, of course, down to his size, but his facial expressions could be gold. This is standard Farley fare with everything you would expect from the late comedian. The film is deliberately tacky and cheap, looking with plenty of toilet humor, dumb visual gags, unrealistic sequences, and Perry is in there purely to attract a bigger audience through his Friends fame. Naturally, he does just that by giving us more Chandler wetness than you can shake a stick at. A period set Chandler. If you're a Farley fan, then you can't go wrong. I liked it for what it is. Just an extremely lighthearted comedy, no brains required. Typical Farley fun fluff.
Period set Chandler. Could we be going any more west?
All right. This one, last one, 5 out of 5 stars. This was my favorite movie as a kid. Would watch it over and over, and I just laugh hysterically. Recently rediscovered it as an adult after about 10 years since the last watch. Still hilarious as ever. The fact that this has 8% on Rotten Tomatoes is an insult to movies. If you need a great belly laugh, this movie will always do the trick.
Wow.
There you go.
Two people that said 8%. I got 5%, so...
Well, the one was from 2017, so maybe it's dropped off a few percent.
It's dropped. More actual critics have put in their 2 cents, I guess. Oh, boy. So, Almost Heroes. I will say that I think I came into this recording with the wrong energy. Because I watched the movie and I got to the end and I just go, wow, that was bad. But having discussed it with you over the last hour, it's just, this made me laugh quite a bit. I guess it was funny. I might have just seen the sadness in the movie and that's why I didn't fully enjoy it while I was in it. But mm-hmm. It really was quite a funny movie. It's just, it's still not going to be my go-to when it comes to Chris Farley movies, though. I'm still going to pick up a Tommy Boy or a Black Sheep or a Beverly Hills Ninja before I pick this up, I think. And again, like you said with Matthew Perry, he is a great, funny actor. I would rather watch The Whole Nine Yards or Fools Rush In or something, or, you know, binge some Friends. You know? Yes. I think ultimately Almost Heroes is probably not going to be picked up again by me, at least anytime soon. But I got some laughs out of it, and I just, I wish that I had enjoyed it more in the moment instead of in this discussion. But yeah, it's kind of like a 40% movie for me, though, you know. Or, you know, like 60% for laughs, 40% for actual movie, you know. I don't know. Colin, I mean, did we show too many holes? Or, like, you still have too much of a fondness for this? How do you sit now?
I think I would still watch this movie, like, you know, in a couple months. I'd watch it again. I think, as we've discussed, like, narratively, it's not the movie that I remember. Like, I definitely would say I don't like it as much as I remembered.
Yeah.
But the really funny parts in it still, I think, are 10 out of 10. Like, yeah, I still think they hit really well. So it's still, I think it's a funny movie. It's one of those movies that I think is like, it, like that one reviewer said, like, it's just stupid, fun, like fluff. That's like the best way you can describe it. It's like, to be honest, I'm not surprised that it, well, I'm a little surprised that it got like 5% from critics. Like, To me, it's one of those movies where I'd expect like a 25-30%, maybe. Like, it's not a movie that I expect critics to love.
Yeah.
But part of me thinks it's like, maybe that's a product of, you have Matthew Perry, Chris Farley, and Christopher Guest at like the height of their powers. Like, maybe expectations were just so high that, you know, and I could see them not living up to them. Like, it's because it's just like, it's not the it's not the like the home run movie that you would expect with those guys at the helm.
Yeah, and it's almost like this movie would have worked better if they had leaned a bit more into the ensemble aspect of it,
mm-hmm.
rather than just relying on Matthew Perry and Chris Farley.
Yeah,
like because the side characters are hilarious, but they don't even seem to interact with everyone enough. Like, the third person listed in the cast list is Bokeem Woodbine, who plays like the porter,
the slave,
the slave, right? And it's like, how does that guy not have more jokes? Because like the ways that they did use him, the few times that they did use him, like, he clearly thinks that this man is an idiot. And so how do we not have a sheriff from Blazing Saddles situation going on with, you know, with Leslie Slave? Like, it's just one of those things where he's underutilized, where I think it would have brought a bit more to it, and it would have given more connective tissue to everything if you had kind of enveloped them in the ensemble a bit more than they were in this movie. Like, Leslie being alone is one thing, because he is the outcast, but, you know, you don't even
believe... I felt the same way about the priest.
Yeah.
Like, both him and the porter slave. There were times where I was like, are they even here? Like, I would forget that they were even a part of it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they would show up for like, when Leslie's dying or whatever, or then... like Bokeem, whatever, would show up, like, basically just to deliver a stellar joke, but like that's all they were used for, like just when it was necessary, but they had no, like you said, like, connective tissue with the overall movie.
Yeah, they had to come in and like drop a mic and walk out again. Yeah, maybe that's a little bit of what was missing for me. I don't know. Yeah. Well, I guess there we go. That's Almost Heroes, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy, if you want to help us out, well, you know, share our posts, tell people, word of mouth is so important for a podcast. Or if you want to go above and beyond, go over to whatever app you listen to your podcasts on and give us some stars. Give us 5 stars, help drive us up those charts, help us get noticed. Or if you want to donate to the show and become an executive producer, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and become part of our Patreon community. And you get a shout out, just like Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
And be sure to check out our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. Drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. And if you want to hear more from me, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. Oh boy, Colin, wish you were here in the new year. Our posthumous released movies go on. And next week, we are going to do one that is my true I used to like this one from my childhood. This is, you know, you say that Almost Heroes is that for you. Next week, it is for me. We're going to do Jetsons the movie. And this movie came out after the voice of George Jetson, George O'Hanlon. It came out after he died. So I'm very excited because growing up, I loved the Jetsons. It was one of those movies that after school, it was always on at 3:30 every day kind of thing. So I watched a lot of Jetsons growing up. And when they came out with this movie, like 30 years after the show was on air, oh boy. And they had the original George Jetson as the voice. But then he died before the movie came out. So
I don't know if I've watched a lot of Jetsons, but I don't know if I've seen the movie.
Yeah. I remember one of the big deals being, too, that Tiffany was the voice of Judy Jetson in Jetsons the
like
movie.
Like of I Think We're Alone Now fame?
Yep. Oh, yeah, nice. And yeah, there was a lot of I Think I'm Alone Now played in my house growing up, so that was also a big part of the nostalgia for Jetsons the movie. So I'm excited to watch this because it's been a long time since I've seen this movie, but I always love bringing up a cartoon on this show.
Yeah, it's been a while. I guess Pagemaster is technically a cartoon,
but but easily forgotten. Yeah. So there we go. Yeah, so until next week, I'm Sean Wells.
I'm Colin Stewart.
And we will see you for Jetsons the Movie on I Used to Like This One. There was something else I was thinking just with what you said, and now I've completely lost it, and it sucks because I'll think of it while I'm editing and I'll be like, fuck, Pass Sean, why didn't you make that joke? Yeah, okay, that's all.